All right, good evening. So this is our last evening here at Soto. It has quite a feel having me emptied out, but it's amazing how much you fill it up with your presence, with your energy, your engagement. And sitting in this hall, it's down to the bare bones. Over this last weekend, you know, a number of people in the hall right now helped us move out, you know, pack things up on Saturday and move it over to the different locations on Monday, and the final move tomorrow. And we'll be saying goodbye to this lovely place. And looking around and seeing how open it is, it's hard to ignore the fact of this change, of this transition, even though we may have been perhaps denying it or postponing it in our minds. It's now becoming unavoidable. So getting ready to move to our new home next week. I was there over the weekend and was up at the new place moving stuff into the office. And a number of us went upstairs to see the hall, and some people for the first time. And the very common response was, "Oh, wow." Which I think is a good sign. That initial Vedna. I went there a couple weeks before to kind of check out the space, and I missed up the appointment time, so I got there when nobody else was there except this lone person down in the office. And I said, "Well, I'm from Sims." And he said, "How do I know you're from Sims? What's the first noble truth?" So I had to think back to last year. I think that was your month, wasn't it? So luckily I gave the right answer, and he said he would have trusted me more with that than with a key. So. And so as you transition from this beautiful place for these last 5 years to a whole new place, it's important to reflect on really what moves, and what changes. You know, what stays the same? And it's really the people in this room. It's the spirit of the Sangha. You know, the triple gem has the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Right? The location, sometimes that shifts. Sometimes we have to find a new home. Of course, this beautiful home for these last 5 years has really helped us become more stable, more relaxed, you know, have a place of stretching out with different sits and different events, and feeling this place of location. Okay? So we have to carry that, strengthen the sense of Sangha as we move to this new place. And it's all an opportunity for practice. It's all a chance to bring our practice into this transition. In the chant that Tori's chanted so beautifully, the Nietzsche chant, it's often chanted at times of people's passing, that all conditioned things are impermanent, with a nature to arise and pass away. One who abides in this truth will live with happiness. So many in this room have been very intimately involved with the arising of this location, of this space, you know, through your volunteering, through your efforts, through your hours, from the board down to the volunteers, all the way through. It's really imbued our energy into this space. All the thoughts, the efforts, the finances, the generosity of Phil and Cora. So all this energy that's come forth, all the people who've passed through these halls, you know, the thousands of people over these 5 years, from the Sunday sits and the Tuesday sits and the Thursday morning sits, the under 40, the evening talks and classes, the non-residentials. But all this is conditioned. It's all based on conditions. So it arose in a certain format in this location, in this place, and now those conditions have changed. And now there's a new arising as this passes away. So as this incarnation of Sims fades, using this as a point of practice. Again, all conditioned things are impermanent, with a nature to arise and pass away. And one who abides in this truth will live in happiness. And this word abiding, abiding with this truth, it means not arguing with this fact of change, the fact that things do flux, things are constantly in change. If we can't find a single thing that is not always in flux, except the very essence that is uniform throughout all experience. And the change happens regardless of our preference or our permission. You know, we can fight against it, we can argue against that, but yet the change moves through us. Whether the change that Sims is going through, or this change of our bodies, of our health, of our minds, you know, of our children getting older, of our parents getting older, of our own selves getting older. So this struggle that we often have with impermanence, with this fact of change, creates this level of dukkha, this level of struggle with this bare reality. Yet the practice isn't about denying this very human relationship to change, this very human relationship to loss, you know, to things aren't not being the way we would like. So it's not about denying or repressing our normal human reactivity, our reaction to change. Really, our practice needs to always call forth a deep willingness to acknowledge what is present, what is actually present in this moment. It calls forth a deep sense of honesty to meet how is my experience, how is this moment's conditions actually are versus how I wish that they were. To actually meet them in a very direct, clear way. What is in our hearts? What is in our minds? To let that honesty rise forth. And not to disallow any aspect of being human because we deem it as not being spiritual. Oh, everything changes, so I shouldn't feel grief. I shouldn't feel loss or sadness. So the sense of acknowledgement is so critical, especially for the areas that we tend to disallow, we tend to repress, avoid seeing. Like with the classic grief process, sometimes we avoid the fact that we are angry. We have anger in our hearts. We're feeling frustrated. We deny this, or the sense of denial itself. Perhaps there's fear, sadness, disappointment. Letting those be met by our practice. And often in beginning classes, intro classes, I emphasize again and again, it doesn't matter what is present in your moment's experience. It is how you meet that. That is the whole art of meditation, is meeting what is here with skill, with clarity, with directness. And in that meeting, there's a transformation that happens. When we're not willing to meet what is present, when we fight and resist it, that's when the dukkha arises. That's when the struggle of our lives arise. There's also in our heart, there's a sense of appreciation, perhaps. Appreciation for having this place of refuge. We come through those doors, and we can leave our troubles aside for a while. We can join with others as we explore these nuances and depths of the Dharma. This often goes into very tender places in our hearts. There's a sense of courage that's needed to meet ourselves in this different way, to meet life in a different way, outside of our realm of thought and reactivity. And it's so helpful to be able to look around and see other people doing the exact same thing. You inspire each other, you support each other. So appreciation for what has been given. You know, for the efforts that you have given, coming to these sits, the Sunday sits, the Tuesday sits, any event here, your very participation is the lifeblood of this organization. Of what you've learned, of the memories, is all part of this experience of appreciation. Some in the room may have a sense looking forward to a sense of excitement about going to a new location. Perhaps it's more convenient. You know, perhaps it's less convenient. Again, all of this is part of practice. How can you learn to meet that with a quality of presence and attentiveness? So making this practice, this transition part of our practice, means we open our eyes to what's here. What is our response to this being our last night here at Sims? Our last night in Soto. What is the true response that arises? Helping us to really grieve well, if there is grief, allows us to fully say goodbye. We have to fully, heartily say goodbye in all its aspects before we can really say hello to the next thing. And this is, in this way, this sense of practicing with impermanence, with the sense of things arising and the passing away, being willing to let things go, allows the next thing to arise. Again, all conditioned things are impermanent, with a nature to arise and to pass away. One who abides in this truth will live in happiness. So a deeper meaning of this abiding is when we stop resisting the fact of change. We stop resisting the fact of things arising and passing away, and actually allow ourselves, in the deepest aspect of ourselves, to be a participant in that arising and passing away. You see this directly every time you watch your breath, as you watch a sensation. It's arising and passing away. And letting our whole being dwell with that, to resonate with that fact of change, allows the fear to fall away of this, the loss, the excitement of something new, to come into this deep sense of aliveness, this deep sense of intimacy, as we realize we're joining this natural process of change. Seeing this really in this fabric of this body, of this mind. Learning to meet each moment with a full heart as it arises, meeting each moment as it fades with a full heart. So as we sit with this last evening here at Soto, and letting that sense of fully acknowledging the whole array of humanity in yourself, the grief, the fear, the excitement, the joy, whatever it might be, allow it to be fully felt, fully acknowledged. Simply this presence of attention, this presence of heart. And we can say goodbye to this wonderful place, this refuge for the last 5 years, as we move to the next place, opening to the mystery of whatever may unfold. All right, thank you for your attention.
Tim took all the good parts. I got to talk about the rub a little bit. Because there's going to be a rub here. And I think that's why practice, why it's, I love the way Tim talked about this as practice. If I start with a story, when I think I've told you guys this, when I used to go to Keystone, and when I first started going to Keystone after my beginning class, because of the nature of being a trial attorney, sometimes you don't get out of court until late. And so I could get to Sims late and still get in the room and still sit comfortably. It was not a big deal. We were in the basement. There were a lot of people, but I could still get there late and sit, find a place to sit. And then I'll never forget the first time. So if you hadn't been in Keystone, we were in the basement, and then you'd go down the stairs, you'd come through the front door, street level, you'd go down these stairs and then go into the room in the basement. And I used to see people sitting on the stairs, but I never thought much about it. And then one time I came, and I had to sit on the stairs. And time after time I would come, and I would have to sit on the stairs, and I would sit there with this irritation that I wasn't in the room. I couldn't actually see Rodney. I tried to squish down in so I could see, but I couldn't actually see him. I could hear him just fine, but there was something about this. I needed to be in the room and see him. There's that. Then when we move to Beth Shalom, it was so far away, so I'd get out of trial and I'd have to rush all the way because it was way out on 75th and 25th. This was way away from where I was. Traffic was not as bad as it is now. But it was difficult to get through traffic and get all the way out there, and I didn't drive to work, so I would have to drive to work on Tuesdays in order to go there. I think that's when we changed to Tuesdays, which was always this trial day. That's the day the trials would start. And so, again, there was all this irritation and frustration with, why did we have to move? Why couldn't we have stayed there at the, you know, Keystone? And grumble, 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 grumble. And eventually, we got to St. Mark's, and it was great for me because it was right down the street. Then we came here. The point I'm making is that at any time I could have left Sims, I know it, because of the irritation that I was going through and the frustration and the changes that happened, that getting from my job and getting out there to Beth Shalom was not as convenient and not as easy. And I can see some of you that have to drive in to the Friends Meeting Hall, our new space, and you try looking for a parking spot, it's gonna start doing some rubbing a little bit. We're going to start having some irritation, something about it that puts this pressure on whether to continue. That's really what it is. We get into a groove in the mind. We go to sleep and we get into this groove of expecting this is the way it's supposed to be. So as soon as something comes along and disrupts that and begins to grate on us, that irritation becomes the thing that the mind says, ah, this just isn't even worth it. It's, we can't do it. It was great back then, but we can't do it now. If I put the three characteristics of existence into perspective, then that grading is exactly what your life is. That's what life is. That's what practice is. Because everything grates on us at some point. In fact, that's what Rodney shared with me one day, that we are asleep 90% of the time. And the only time we wake up is when something irritates us. And when that irritation wakes us up, that is when we can move from the dukkha and the nature of dukkha into the cessation of suffering. Because it's only in the moment when we feel the grate of something different, something not quite right, something not the way it should be, that is when we can actually begin to see dukkha comes from within. It doesn't come from without. So my dukkha around sitting on the stairs was more about my own opinion about you should be in the room and not where I was sitting. I could hear just fine. Even when I showed up to Beth Shalom late because of the trial calendar, never did anybody look over at me and say, what are you doing in here so late? No one even looked. Nobody even cared. I mean, it's like I would come in and nobody even turns and say, oh, Tawari's here. It was all in here, this mental idea of what it's supposed to look like and what it's supposed to be like. And those decisions are based on the adjustment the mind has made in order for you to be here. So there had to be some adjustment from St. Mark's, if you came from St. Mark's, or if you started coming to Sims from here, there was an adjustment that the mind made in order to fit this into our lives. And then once it started fit into our lives, fitting there, the mind is okay with it. It's relaxed into it. The minute we shift that energy to another place, it will shift our capacity for practice. Unless we begin to look at those things that grate upon us as actually the point that Buddha was trying to make. He was trying to say, in my opinion, that suffering is the doorway into liberation. It's the doorway. It's the first noble truth. It's the first ennobling aspect of being able to awaken. We have to first see that there's some dukkha there and then practice with it. If we just go through life the way we want everything to be smooth, everything to be okay, everything to go along really, really nicely. And as soon as some upheaval happens, we start having a problem and finding a way to smooth it out. Finding a way to make it not so difficult anymore. And we can do that. You know, we could say, oh, it's just not worth it. I can't find a place to park, so that's it. I could have done that with the sitting on the steps. Like, I can't do this. If I can't sit in the room, then why do they have to start it at 7? Why don't they start it at 7:30? But we miss something when we smooth out the rough edges. We have a mind that has the capacity to smooth out the rough edges. But we miss something when we do that. When we use our own capacity to make some difficulty easier. Like, I'm not going to come anymore. I'll just listen to it online. I'm not going to go through all that. It's not worth it. I'll just do something else. I'll just go to the non-residentials. That's good enough. When we do things like that, we create in the mind this way in which we believe we can fix the outer conditions and then I won't suffer. But that outer condition changing and fixing is so limiting. It's so minor from the freedom that's available when we actually turn inward and see how we are relating to a situation, and that's where that suffering comes. When we turn inward and we unhook that mind state that's stuck on the way it should be, there's a possibility of liberation that doesn't exist when we smooth out the rough edges. So we have this kind of way in which we don't want to smooth out the rough edges, but the edges are rough. So there becomes this other, it's like the other side of it. Understanding impermanence and its relationship to dukkha and this non-self, understanding those three characteristics and how this is the nature of the way things are. This is what Buddha saw. This is what he was pointing to, pointing and pointing and pointing. it is always going to be impermanent, and that impermanency is always going to irritate us. It's always going to rub up against us, and we are always going to try to somehow or another make it personal and fix it so it personally works for us. If you stop doing that, if you just let the rough edges be rough and stop trying to smooth them out, you need another pillar in order to do this, I think, which is why we put our trust in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Meaning that you're not coming to Sims and battling traffic and parking and whatever else we have to battle. You're not doing all of that because you're coming to a social club event. It's not that. You're not battling it just so you could see your friends or get together and hang out. That's not why we're battling or dealing with or not letting the rough edges smooth away. We are practicing with the rough edges for the purpose of awakening. You need those rough edges in this new space in order to have a new, fresh, more open, present moment experience with Sims. Not the Sims that's in this building, but the Sims that we're going to be when we move to this new space. You'll need this to be in the present moment. So we're practicing with these rough edges for the purpose of awakening. And if we think about the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, then the Sangha is what brings us together. It's the thing that says, come on, we're going to do this together. Everybody's going to have a little rough edges. I assure you, you will not be the only one grumbling about the parking. There will be several people grumbling about the parking. But somehow, you're going to make an adjustment. Somehow, the parking as a Sangha will figure out a way to adjust to that. Somehow, together, we'll figure out how can we make this this practice opportunity for everyone. Just like we asked for people who want to ride home. There's a way in which we do that. I've never heard anyone ask for if anyone needs a ride home. And I've taught at many sanghas, no one ever asked that. And I have been coming to Sims for 15 years, and never has anyone ever not been able to get a ride home. So there's a way in which we can figure out a way to make this work for all of us, as long as we're all relying on the Sangha as this practice opportunity. The whole Dhamma is based in this idea that we're going to pay attention to the suffering, the cause of that suffering, and the release of that suffering, the relinquishment of that suffering. I cannot relinquish suffering by making things different. It's going to change. Some of you are going to have to go north, and traffic might be crazy going north. And it was so much easier when you could just come across a bridge and get right, and take that little exit, and that was it. Now you got to go northbound, and that might be scary. Some of the northbound people who had to come southbound, I used to feel for Tim when he had to teach. Like sometimes he had to leave at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get to Sims. And I'm like thinking at 6 o'clock, like, oh, I think I should go now. So a lot of those northbound people might be happy that we're finally north of the Ship Canal Bridge. But that, what the Dhamma is doing for us is actually creating a way for us to pay attention to life through Dhamma, not through the circumstances so much, but you take the circumstances that you're in and you look at it through the eyes, through the wisdom of the Dhamma. And that wisdom of looking at it through there is the only way we can actually create that relinquishment. In fact, I say this mantra to myself over and over and over. As often as I had read the Four Noble Truths, it wasn't until last year when we started actually working on the Four Noble Truths that I read that phrase that the Buddha said at his enlightenment. He heard something he had never heard before. Or he heard something that had never been heard before. So in some respects, we're looking for opportunities to experience dukkha in a way that we can see something, hear something, realize something we had not experienced before. Not just can we figure out a way to fit this in. We need new experiences, new dukkha, so that we can experience it in a way we had not experienced it before. And then finally, in this idea of putting our faith in the Buddha, it's the nature of the group that we are. We are beings on the path to awakening. Everything we do needs to be in the service of that, beings on the path to awakening. There's a practice called the 37 practices, or the 37 verses of a bodhisattva. It's a Mahayana practice. And in that practice, one of the 37 practices is that you take care and not find fault with someone who's on the path to awakening. And I remember the first time I read that, thinking, that doesn't make any sense. Not finding fault with people on the path. It doesn't make any sense, because I know some people on the path, but I got some fault with them. And this teacher explained this to me in a way that was so beautiful. It's not that you don't find fault. This idea that we have of blaming, or people have to take account, responsibility and be accountable for their behavior on the path. That's true. But what you begin to see as you step on the path and you stay on the path, is that even the irritations, the rubs, the difficulty, the things that we have to go through, all the things that Tim was talking about that show up when we're trying to practice in this path, what you do is understand the limitations of being human on the path. That's what we're going to do. We're going to understand the limitations of being human. So some of you, I may not see you as often as I've seen you here. It's just the nature of the way things are. And it's not this sense of, oh, something's wrong because people aren't showing up to the friends' meeting hall. Instead, there are limitations that we have to being human. And we're just all going to try to find our way on this path together and hold everybody in this sangha in the kind of heart that looks at little kids when they keep trying to walk and they keep stumbling over and bumping into stuff. And or probably a better one for a two-year-old, when they are trying to get everything they see and you keep saying, nope, 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 not that, nope, nope, nope. That sense of always, you know, grasping after, that the way we take care with children and the way we take care with animals and the way we take care with people who need extra help, that's the kind of care we need to hold with each other. And that's what you do by not holding fault for people who are on the path. We just hold each other together as a Sangha with the Dhamma, however it comes. And whatever happens, however it shows up, it's all good. That's the way it's supposed to be. So, I think that's my 20 minutes.
Thank you.
So Tim and I were going to have some questions if anybody had any. No, we were going to let people share how they're feeling about this move, where they're at right now, and just if you had any comments, it's, you know, whatever.
Where those edges might be.
Yeah. Yeah, concerns or worries you might have.
Or questions about the practice too, if you're all filled with equanimity and metta.
That's good Dhamma. That's because we get good Dhamma talk. I'm warning you.
Well, we're a little spoiled here with what I think about 80 spots. And so the new place has, I think, 20, 21, something like that. And there are some, you know, right immediately around it, there's no street parking because there's so many populations. But if you just go a little bit west, there's some parking along the street on 5th. And then there's also a couple lots that the U has that you can pay for that. And we'll have that on the website, or we already have it on the website. Okay, so you check the website for parking suggestions.
Yeah.
And then also it's a good chance to carpool. You know, carpooling, I think if you do it regularly, you really get to know the people and it becomes like a little Dharma buddy. And you can debrief and after the talks and really encourage each other, hold each other accountable. When you feel like, oh, I don't want to go, but I got to take my friend, it's like you often are glad that you went.
Oh, good.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's good.
So just if you didn't hear that, the climate group is going to have an online tool for facilitating carpooling.
Is there anyone who's having difficulty with this idea of moving? It won't be there in this configuration, right? So this configuration brought with it some good and some bad. One of the things that was good about St. Mark's is that there was a coming together and making Sims every time we came. So every week, I don't know if you were there when we were at St. Mark's, so you didn't see that, but we used to come together and make St. Mark's, make Sims, and then at the evening we would take it apart. We don't have to take it apart as much as we have to, we don't have to bring it together and take it apart as much as we did at St. Mark's. St. Mark's was just a giant empty room like this, so we'd have to get it together and then take it apart. By coming here, we didn't have to do that. So there was a sense that when you walked in, it was here. The bringing things together, though, creates a sense of, there was a sense of volunteerism at St. Mark's that we never could quite get here because it seems like it's already fixed. So in some respects, there's the possibility of having more volunteers and more continuity in that way when you go there versus here when there's just in our minds a thought, oh, well, it's already together. You don't really need me. And so I think what, if I, Tim, you might be different on this, but what I think happened when we were at these other locations, similar to the situation we're going into, is that the solidity came with seeing each other. There's a sense of, oh yeah, we're here. And you see people you know, you even get to the chair that's always yours, and you can get that little eye, like, that's my chair. Yeah. So I can still remember the chairs I sat in when I was at St. Mark's. And I sat in the same place every single week. So there's a way in which the Sangha becomes the faces you see and that the inner space of the room. So it does have its solidity to it, but that's where it usually comes from, more so than seeing the building door.
Yeah, I would, you know, totally agree with that. I think the solidity, the sense of solidity also comes from our intentionality. That's it's unified. Like at Keystone, I would sometimes get there late also, and it would feel like I would walk into this kind of field of silence. You know, and that was really established by everybody sitting and with this common intentionality. Mm-hmm. So that solidity, we sometimes mistake the building for the solidity. But the solidity is really in you. It's in each one of us, especially when we unify around this practice. You know, as a teacher, sometimes I have to set up a sacred space in a place that's not sacred, that's used for bingo or whatever it might be. Not to say that bingo is not sacred for...
Watch that.
Just in a different way. But that sense of sacredness, it's really by our intentionality. That's what makes it sacred, what makes that solidity. It's really that, and I think you'll be surprised at how much that transfers.
Yeah.
You know, there's an essence that as our eyes are closed, it's really our whole selves are feeling that. And that's really the part that feels like that's the stability part. Let's go with Peter. We'll go around a circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, 65th. It's about 20 blocks away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gene.
I have to confess that I don't know much about Friends. Are they Christians?
Oh, they're Quakers. They're Quaker. They do have a meditative practice, so when you go into their sanctuary, it's going to feel like a practice, that a space that feels familiar to us. It's not like going into a church where they have pews. You're going to go into a church where it's in this circular configuration that will feel a lot like the way ours, what we would want to sit with. And so they have a lot of meditation as part of their practice, and so
what does that mean for Sunday steps and for non-residential retreat on Sunday? Do they meet on Sunday?
They do. Their meeting is on Sunday mornings, so yeah. That's unfortunately a big drawback with taking care of Sunday sits. So we're still looking for a good location for that. The non-residentials will be mostly held at Bastyr. We'll have some day-longs on Saturday day at Friends. And some of the bigger ones will be at Nalanda West, like Rodney's, I think we're going to have there. And Sharon, if she's able to come back next year, will be there too. Is Philip there too? Yes. 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 So if you right on, I think it's on 9th. So it's on 9th and 40th. And so at the facing side facing 9th, there's a kind of a wooden fence with a gateway. And we'll put some signs up, I think. Yeah, we will. They're, the people who are in charge of this are nodding. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the big drawbacks is we won't have the train.
Yeah. Yep.
She said that when she first went to the space yesterday. Was it just yesterday?
Yeah.
Jeez. Feels like it was last week. I was that it felt very a sense of peace to get you to feel that sense of I'm paraphrasing, that sense of calm that it's yeah. been a. Similar to what Tori was saying, this is a place of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and there's also a nice wall of windows with some trees behind, which are very grounding. So to remember that there's much positive about this place.
Yeah, I will.
But just having that, not knowing when it's going to start again, and then having that uncertainty, it is
So the comment was about the Sunday sit and bringing his daughter, and then not, the Sunday sit doesn't have a space right now, and so there's, he was just expressing the loss and the difficulty holding that that uncertainty about having a space and not knowing what to do, and his daughter, because for those of you that don't know, at that Sunday morning sit, the kids are here in the space with us, and so they just go to a separate, they sit with us, and then after 5 minutes of meditation, they can go away. And it's quite cute to actually see them doing walking meditation when we do walking meditation. And they don't necessarily just go off somewhere and play. Some of them, especially the older ones, they can actually participate in the walking, they sit. And so, and you can hear them in the background playing, the younger ones, but there's a, they know to be a little quiet. They know they're in this meditative place, even though they can play. And so there's a quality there that is special, and that's what I think he was expressing, that he would miss that. So the best way to hold this in a way that I think is the most supportive is this. There may be uncertainty about where we are going, but there's no uncertainty about whether we're going to find another space. So the finding another space is going to happen. And but where and when might be a little bit, that's where the uncertainty is. We are pretty clear it will be by the fall. We've kind of given ourselves that deadline of having a space by the end of the summer. It's a little different because we do have to find a place that will let us meet every Sunday. And mostly when we look for, you know, hourly places, they're churches. And it's harder when you start thinking about a community space that's public to take that space away every single Sunday. And so that's why we're having some difficulty finding a place. But think of this as summer break. And then when school starts and fall starts, we'll be right back in the thick of it again. So it's just like taking a little summer break. That's the way I look at it. And hopefully we can find a place ahead of time. But just make sure I have your email, because we'll post it on the website. But for all the people that go to that Sit Sunday regularly, if you signed up on one of those lists, we'll send you a notice to give you plenty of time to prepare when we find a place. But we will. Good.
Yeah, Valerie. So the question is around sandwich retreats and introductory to Buddhism classes. So the sandwich retreats are a little bit more difficult, but maybe not so much. We can, you know, we have Saturdays that we can, we've basically contracted with friends to have a certain number of Saturdays a year. Just the evening times, we have to negotiate with their schedule. So I think those are possible. In terms of the Buddhist essential class, is that what you're talking about? So I know that the local Dharma leaders are working on their plans for this fall. So that I think, you know, we're planning on and offering that.
Yeah.
And we'll still have our introductory classes, four of those a year. And we'll be able to have those at Friends also.
Yeah. We'll still have the intensive practice class also. So every, I think whatever, all the offerings that we have now will remain the same. It's just a matter of knowing. We don't have as much flexibility in the scheduling that we have here. That's pretty much the difficulty. So it just means we'll probably have to figure out our schedule earlier in the year. Wow. Is that it? Yeah. Excuse me?
There was a setup at
Is it similar? But it's, they have a lot of chairs in there.
Yeah, they have, their chairs are kind of set up in a particular way. And so we'll be taking some of them aside and rearranging some of them and bringing some cushions up from downstairs. So there'll still be kind of a setup process and a putting down process. But it won't be probably not quite as intense as it was at St. Mark's. Well, as Tori said, we had to strip it down to an empty room.
Bare,
basically. So we get to, and then that really does build a sense of participation, as, you know, as she was mentioning. I think that's something we've gotten a little lazy here, that we kind of,
yeah.
Oh, someone else is going to take care of it, you know. But we actually see, okay, you know, my neighbor's picking up their chair. It's like, oh, I can pick up my chair. And that helps, you know, really engage us in a different way that we have, you know, we've kind of not translated in the same way as we have at here.
Yeah, we won't have to have our chair instructions on how to hang the chair up. Some of you old folks remember those chair instruction sessions.
Yeah, Deb. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, just a couple announcements, then you do your...
Okay. Got a little special thing for you.
But before we get to that, just a couple quick announcements. So I announced the card back there for Phil and Cora. So again, they've been immensely generous. I mean, this is Phil's building, and he built it from scratch and offered this space to us rent-free for 5 years. And not only that, they basically built out everything for us. And so their generosity is really boundless. And so it's a sense of appreciation for this great gift that they have given us for these 5 years. And that sense of gratitude. So you can write, if you like, to write on that card back there. So I mentioned the Lost and Found. Oh, next Monday, our first sitting at this Friends, we're going to be having the last bit of it, kind of a tea and social. So if you like to bring some food to share, it would be a nice way to kind of talk about how it is there and how you feel. And we hope that some of the board members from Friends will arrive to share that with us. And then finally, Tina and Stephen are doing a day-long on concentration on June 8th, and that will be at Bastyr. Now, did I miss anything else, Barbara? Finger food, so no stews or... Yes. So finger food. Yeah, Peter.
So you mentioned that we're meeting Monday. I don't know if everybody knows that we're shifting from Tuesday to Monday. Been a Tuesday for a long time.
Yes. Yep, so we're making the big shift one day earlier to Monday. Yeah, so some of you that may not work, which we are very, we apologize for that. The Friends has a long-standing Scrabble group that meets on Tuesdays, and so they have first dibs. So we thought we won't have to deal with the parking conflicts, and it'd be much quieter without them, you know, doing the Scrabble stuff.
Remind people about tomorrow, moving the rest of the
cheer. In terms of the people who, I think there's already people signed up for it. Yeah, there's already a good team. And then at the end of tonight, I think if we could, before when Tori gets done, we'll have we can take some of the racks here and stack all the chairs, stack the cushions, make it really easy for the group tomorrow. All right, anything else that we want to touch on? Okay.
I'm going to do a cardinal sin and bring my cell phone out up here. Do you guys know the chant, "May the long time sun shine upon you"? Well, that chant I think is beautiful for ending. And I'd like us to sing it along with this recording. But she's going to say, "May the long time sun shine upon you." These are the words. "May the long time sun shine upon you. All love surround you. May the pure light within you guide your way on." So I'd like us to say, "May the long time sun shine upon us, all love surround us, and the pure light within us guide our way on." Right? Such a beautiful song. So put this mic up.
Upon us, all love surround us.
Thank you for your practice.
And ride share, anyone need a ride? Okay, thank you. And if you'd like to help us stack some chairs, we can maybe if you bring the racks over and the cushions near the door.